KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor One Voice, an evening on Friday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at Unity Church in Portland. The One Voice event features a film screening of Unaccompanied, Alone in America, a documentary about immigrant children who have been separated from their parents while seeking refuge in the U.S., as well as performances by Jennifer Berezin and Chris Webster. This is a benefit for Immigration Counseling Service, Oregon's oldest nonprofit immigration law firm. Again, that's One Voice, Friday, February 1st at 7 p.m. at Unity Church, 4525 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Folk Music Society 2018-19 concert season. Tishy Nahosa is the featured performer at the February 15th concert. Singer-songwriter Tishy Nahosa's songs are a blend of Americana, country, Latino, and pop. She has been a featured artist at the White House, Austin City Limits, and Prairie Home Companion. Again, Tishy Nahosa appearing on the PFS stage on Friday, February 15th at 7:30 p.m. at the Reedwood Friends Church, located at 2901 Southeast Steele Street in Portland, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hello, everyone. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. Tonight, we are speaking about harm reduction and needle distribution. This is a lifeline of safety and health for some of the most targeted and vulnerable people in our communities. And yet, despite being good policy, it's controversial because it says that people who we regularly are meant to understand as being less than us deserve basic dignity, and people bristle at that. And I have two people who argue back and have something to say. So I have Sarah.
Hello.
And Ren.
Hello.
And they are from Portland People's Outreach Project, or PPOP. And they are public health heroes and heroines. No pun, of course. And they're going to teach us all a little bit about why harm reduction, why needle distribution, and how we might relate to the struggle going forward. So I just want to start by saying thank you for your time.
Of course.
We're going to go for the full hour, if that's okay with you. Okay. So to start things off, maybe just you can first introduce how you come to the work. Mm-hmm. So that's a good way to start before we jump right into the work. How did you come to the work? Please, Sarah, you first.
Yeah, I've been doing harm reduction work for about 4.5 years now, and I started, interestingly enough, because I thought I wanted to help people get off of drugs, and I was like, oh, well, I started off outside, and I thought that this would be a really good opportunity to work directly with people, mm-hmm. With addictions, and I quickly learned that I actually have a passion for helping people stay safe and healthy while they use drugs, and actually don't care whether or not people want to be sober or not. And so from outside in, I started with PPOP, and I've been with them for about 2.5 years now.
Just before we go to Ren, can you just say what Outside In is, just for people who may not know?
Yeah, it is a nonprofit in Portland, and that does stuff for youth specifically, but also Ren could talk about this better than me. But and they have a needle exchange, which serves a lot of people every year. So I volunteered there for a few years.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you for your work.
Of course.
Ren.
Yeah, just to add to Outside In, they're also a friendly qualified health clinic that serves adults as well as youth They do have a drop-in program for houseless youth, as well as a school, a doggy daycare, tattoo removal. They have a lot of great resources for the community there, as well as harm reduction resources. So I came to the work by just kind of living in a community where this was, drug use was a big part of it, and realizing that there needed to be resources for people who were in all different walks of their use. And so I didn't really have words for that for a long time, but there happened to be a harm reduction conference in Portland when I was 19 that I just happened to walk into and learned all about it. And then since then, I've just been really excited. I've been with PPOP for 3.5 years, four years now, and just have grown really passionate about sharing my understanding of how this can save lives.
Excellent. Thank you for your work. Yeah. So particularly PPOP, or again, the Portland People's Outreach Project, if y'all can talk about the history of the organization, how it came to be, and why.
PPOP is actually an offshoot of a larger organization called the People's Harm Reduction Alliance, which is up in Seattle. We also have another sister organization called Aggie Hop, the Emma Goldman Homeless Youth Outreach Project or something like that. I never know what the acronym stands for. But so a couple years back, we started off the model that Aggie Hop uses, which is bicycle outreach, where not only like in the harm reduction principle of meeting people where they're at in their drug use, like physically going to the places where people need resources and aren't getting them. That's our Friday night bike outreach. And then we were fortunate enough to secure a space about 3.5 years ago in a place called Anares, which we unfortunately lost recently, but had been there for several years and were able to do wound care and really built up a community there of just support and safety resources. And then about 2.5 years ago, we started Sunday outreach, which is a walkabout and other places that are underserved. The idea was to make sure that these resources, syringes, Narcan, wound care, just general information about safety, were available to the community when places like Outside In and the county syringe exchanges weren't open. Our principles are also need-based, so we are not a one-for-one exchange. There are kits that people can get at the county and Outside In that if you don't have any syringes, they'll give you a certain amount, but we give everyone the same amount. We're trying to make a like fair playing field. Oftentimes people end up in desperate situations and need to get more syringes than are available because they might not be able to make it out as often. And so we want to give 50 to 100 to everyone that walks in our door.
So can you say what Narcan is for people who don't know?
Yeah. So Narcan, also known as naloxone, is an opiate overdose reversal drug. This can be given to anyone who's an active overdose. It doesn't work on other substances, obviously, but it saves thousands of lives in the city every year.
Excellent. Did Ren hit all the points about like the history of PPOP, as you know?
Yeah.
Okay. So now if we can talk about the significance, like what, why PPOP, right? So now we know how, but why is it important?
PPOP's important because we are all volunteer run, and we are made up of people who have never used drugs, people who used to use drugs, and people who actively use drugs. And I think people who actively use drugs are the most important people in the harm reduction movement because they have lived experience and they're able to offer their community support and understanding and compassion in the way that people that don't have that experience have. So that's really significant because I think a lot of times exchanges, you walk in them and there's people that have like master's degrees and are really privileged and don't have any lived experience. And so the people getting resources can't relate to the people giving the resources. Mm-hmm. And so PPOP is unique in the sense that people know that a lot of our volunteers have been through what they're going through or live the same lifestyle. And so there's a different sense of comfort.
Okay.
And also, like, in the history of the organization, that's where PRUD started. I think it's a really important thing to mention that the concept of harm reduction in general didn't come out of public health. It's not a public health concept. It is a concept that came directly from communities making sure that people were safe. Drug users have been keeping each other alive since people have been using drugs. It's not, mm-hmm. you know,
yeah.
some department in the county that mm-hmm. made this concept happen. Mm-hmm. It's people who saw their friends getting diseases and made sure that they could have access to syringes.
Mm-hmm. So if we can talk a little bit about stigma, criminalization, what is it that makes this work so difficult politically? I mean, the pushback against needle distribution and harm and the harm reduction model period is constantly being attacked. And I want to pull that out. Like, mm-hmm. what are the arguments and how do we take them down when we come across them?
A big one is that we're enabling people by giving them supplies to do drugs. We are not enabling people to do drugs. We're enabling people to be safe and healthy and happy by giving them the tools that they need to, reverse an overdose or stay disease-free or not spread disease. So that's a big argument that we hear. And also, like, people aren't going to start doing drugs because there's a syringe exchange in town.
Sure.
That's not how it works. Mm-hmm. There's a ton of cities throughout this country that are that have so many people that inject drugs mm-hmm. and have huge opiate using populations, and they don't have syringe exchanges there. Mm-hmm. So the correlation, there's no correlation there. It doesn't make any sense. Okay. So that's a big argument that we hear. People just don't like us in their neighborhoods mm-hmm. because they see people that use drugs and they don't like that. They don't like seeing poor people. They don't like seeing poor people who use drugs, mm-hmm. Despite the fact that those are their neighbors and those are community members and those people are in that neighborhood, whether or not they see them.
Can you just say that again?
Those people are their neighbors and they are in the community. And, you know, I think that sometimes it's more visible when we're there, but despite it, they're there. They're your neighbors. A lot of these people have been in these neighborhoods longer than you have.
Yeah.
To speak about St. John's, even where we had our set site location for several years, there were so many people who that's where they grew up. And we would oftentimes have recent transplants into the neighborhood come and talk about not in our backyard. And the truth is, it's their community. It's mm-hmm. where they grew up. That's and so as we've actually shifted out of that space, we've had a pretty big uptick in people being outraged around the visibility of it. But I think it's really important that we demystify like what this work actually is and mm-hmm. how close it is to everyone's lives and not just make it this foreign, scary thing, because all of us know someone who is impacted by drugs,
sure.
if it's your family member or sure. your neighbor. So,
well, one interesting thing, and then hopefully I can actually go into questions from listeners and viewers. Mm-hmm. I'm live on my Facebook page if anyone wants to see the guests and the host that's listening. Alyssa Pariah on Facebook. I want to just bring out the fact that the face of the opioid epidemic now has changed, and suddenly there's much more compassion and understanding now that many of the people who are dealing with opioid addiction are middle-class white people versus poor Black and Latino people from the hood. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And can we talk? Do y'all talk about this at all in
yes.
BPOP?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Please enlighten us.
Yeah, it's a very real thing. You know, as somebody who works in the field of health and recovery, there's definitely like a shifting view in the medical world, in the public health world, in the social work world about you know, changing from tough love to just compassion and love and respect for people who yeah. use drugs. And that wasn't around in the 80s and the 90s when the face of drugs was black and poor.
The war on drugs.
Exactly.
We've gone from the war on drugs to a public health crisis. Mm-hmm. Wasn't it always?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it the skin color that makes the difference?
Yeah.
And that's yeah. That's
I'm just what, asking questions.
Yeah, no, no. Absolutely. Like, I think that's one of the big things in noting, like, this idea didn't come out of public health. Keeping people safe didn't come out of public health. It came out of communities yeah. supporting one another. And this is a huge, like, racial justice issue also. Mm-hmm. Like, making sure that we make that noted and so that we can continue, because it's not just an opiate epidemic, like, speaking about Portland, there's so much meth use. There's so much crack use in other communities too. Mm-hmm. And like to only focus on this one thing because it is seen as a white issue, like the face mm-hmm. of this epidemic is white, mm-hmm. is like missing the point of how much we need to like focus on disease transmission and everything like that too. Mm-hmm. And how all of those communities need to get represented in these conversations.
Thank you for that. Thank you for being frank.
Yeah.
Because it's so blaring. And of course, I'm, I support decriminalization totally. Mm-hmm. I don't think any less of people who are in active addiction. I just, you know, this world is terrible. I can't really blame you.
Yeah.
Right. And I can't help but notice that there is a change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I grew up in a neighborhood and that had a lot of drugs, and I grew up around a lot of addicts too, and they weren't looked at the way that, you know, mm-hmm. some well, okay, I won't beat the dead horse here, but
no, I mean, even now with it shifting, it's still shifting, like, for white people. I mean, you know, we see that black and brown people are still being treated in the same ways, you know. Yeah. They're, you know, so often I've heard from people being giving less harsh sentences for drugs, or the cops even just kind of turning blind eye when they see them using on the streets or dealing. But those aren't things that are happening to black and brown people. Those are things that are happening to white people.
So we have an audience question from Donna, wanting to know, how does PPOP work in conjunction with your Narcan program and your needle distribution? How do they work together?
So I can just go through what a day is like. Okay. As if you were someone who is trying to come in and access resources. Generally, we have what we call a buffet style setup. So we actually allow people to decide how much of all of the general injection equipment is needed. So outside of syringes, so everyone gets 50 to 100 dependent on the day, but the cookers, cottons, tourniquets, I know some people might not be familiar what those mean, but that setup, and then they're engaged with by one of the volunteers. So we ask all of the folks at accessing resources if they need Narcan and if they need other resources. So if they say yes, one of the volunteers will take them to the side and give them a training. Even if they've been trained before, we ensure that they know every step of the process, and also just give space. For those of you who haven't witnessed an overdose or reversed an overdose, I'm really happy for you. And for those of you who have, thank you for being a hero. Mm-hmm. But it's a traumatic event, and I think that it's really important that we recognize that each one of those people who are both accessing the syringes are trying to keep their community safer and are lifesavers. Right. Like, those kits go out and ensure that one of your community members stays alive. But so we have that, and then we also will generally ask questions about if they need to be connected with other things, housing, food resources, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Also, another thing that often gets misconstrued is that we don't connect people to treatment, which is untrue. We don't force people to be in a place they don't want to be, but if someone wants to stop using drugs, we meet them there. Mm-hmm. If they want to lessen their drug use, we'll meet them there. Mm-hmm. If they're fine where they are and they just want to know how to be safer, we'll meet them in that spot too. So I think it's just often confusing for people. They think that we're like glorifying the use of drugs, but it's just we're just respecting people and the choices that they make.
Wow, what a kick.
Yeah.
Wow. So audience question from Michelle Pagan, my mother. Hi, Mom.
Hi. Hi.
So she wants to know about the overdose rate in Portland, if you have those facts and figures. And also, what about counseling? Does PPOP offer counseling?
I personally don't know the exact rates of overdoses.
They haven't come out with the Multnomah County general numbers this year. So
a lot of people.
Okay.
A lot of people also experience overdose but don't pass away. Narcan is a huge part of that. And as far as counseling, we don't do any like formal counseling. Like we don't have any counseling or social work staff that is able to formally offer that service. Mm-hmm. But we do a lot of connecting people to resources. So, you know, depending, people tell us about their insurance and we give them resources of where they could go. We tell them about our experiences in navigating therapy and, you know, who's a good therapist, what's a good agency to that would meet their needs, things like that. So, yeah, we have a lot of those conversations.
Unfortunately, we don't have the financial resources to often do larger scale programs like that. We fundraise like nobody's business and also look for privately. Private donations. Yeah. So
what about going after government money? I mean, a question that came in, Jamie Partridge, my father, what is the policy demand of government? Who are the targets?
So there's a lot of different targets at this point because there's a lot of things that need to change in regards to this residue laws, possession, safe consumption spaces, as well as even things like treatment for Hep C that was able to change this year, but Medicaid wasn't covering Hep C treatment, which is a huge issue here in Oregon. We were actually rated the worst in the nation for a period of time for the death rate related to Hep C, which 80% of new cases are in active drug users. So, yeah.
How is that? Because Hep C treatment is not covered under Medicaid here. That's the reason.
So, I mean, it's a correlation. I wouldn't say it's a direct, like, reason.
I wasn't trying to set you up.
Yeah. No. But so... When you have many people who have the disease but are unable to cure it, it is one of our few curable infectious diseases until there's stages of Hep C. So until later on in their disease, they have so many opportunities to transmit that disease. Mm-hmm. In the next coming year, Oregon has promised to change those regulations and treat everyone. So they weren't treating people without 6 months sobriety, and then they were also not treating people until they were in stage 3 or 4 of fibrosis, which is permanent liver damage.
Where Mumia is at. I'll just say free Mumia, and you can Google that later. I'll get a Mumia activist on and we'll talk about that another time.
My sister.
Okay, great. Next week. Okay. All right. Great. So I got a note from one of my producers. K-Boo has a podcast that's called Bright Spark. Do you all know about this?
Mm-mm.
It covers harm reduction topics.
Oh,
cool.
So if people would like to listen...
feel like I should know
to
about
it go to kboo.fm. Bright Spark is under the podcast tab, so if people would like to learn more, and then maybe you all can actually vet them, since you know I know you. So we have another one coming in from Michelle, who, by the way, if you didn't know, my mom, she works at a rehab.
Oh, okay.
So she does counseling, and she's an incredible spirit that wants to help people to get off of drugs like she did. Mm-hmm. And so I'm extremely proud, and I'm so happy that she's so invested. So thanks again, Mom. I'm just going to go ahead and have cheesy moments. I don't care. She wants you to talk about Narcan not being able to help with fentanyl overdoses.
So that's not actually true. There is different analogs of drugs coming out that are not actually opiates, but the opiate analogs like fentanyl, carfentanil, things like that, it requires more Narcan, but it doesn't, there's not like opiates that are resistant to Narcan at this point. Okay. It's, there's a lot of media, there's a lot of fanfare around like, just looking at fentanyl will kill you and there's no way you can prevent it, but that's not true. It's creating this idea of a group of untouchables.
Yeah.
It's
the other stuff is okay.
Yeah, it's
the fentanyl.
It's like bad. it's kind of, well, it's also making it so someone that you would assume is using drugs, like by looking at them, mm-hmm. they're now untouchable because if you touch them, you'll die of a fentanyl overdose, mm-hmm. right? And mm-hmm. it's also, yeah, I just have a lot of problems with how policing and all of those things in the victimization of the police in these situations when they're not actually overdosing and dying.
The victimization of police?
Yeah, of it in these situations where it's like they're harming drug users and then they are saying that it's just not possible for someone to like dermally touch fentanyl and overdose. They developed patches for that, and that development took so many years. Okay. And so like the media is just kind of creating this narrative where police are
right. So it's the media victimizing police officers.
Yes.
Okay. I just, you know, I'm triggered when people talk about police in a good light.
So. No, I was not. Okay. That was not what was happening. Okay. Sorry. If that's
No. It's okay. You know, we've all got our faults. So I am hoping that you can talk about your really impressive outreach. So it's right in the name, right? Mm-hmm. Again, this is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. This is The Struggle, a show on Cable Community Radio that brings in good organizers and activists doing work in the community to shine a light on it and to hopefully get you to support them. And tonight I'm speaking with Sarah and Ren, and they work with the Portland People's Outreach Project. They do harm reduction and needle distribution and help in very important ways getting necessary resources to some of the most targeted members of our community. And right now, I'm hoping that you all can talk about how you came up with your outreach model, mm-hmm. because it's some of the best that I've seen.
Yeah, so we post up in spots where people want us to be. So when we are thinking of like where to move. If for whatever reason one spot is not accessible anymore, we ask our participants, what is a good spot for us to be in where we are visible to you? What's a spot where we are safe and, you know, not outing a bunch of people, or in, you know, a place where a lot of police will see you? Mm-hmm. So that's how we dictate where we're going to be, is by directly asking our participants where mm-hmm. they want us. And we also, you know, we are all about like literally meeting people where they are. So we don't want people to have to come to us. We want to come
Fabulous.
To people.
Fabulous.
So that means like going under bridges and standing there with buckets of stuff in the rain.
Yeah.
That's literally what we do.
Thank you.
And we go to different spots that are heavily concentrated by people that use drugs. Mm-hmm. And we have a style where people are able to, you know, get what they need. A lot of exchanges have this model where they give you what they can give you, mm-hmm. And they are able to dictate like what they think that somebody needs, versus PPOP, where we like literally have supplies out there and people can take what they need.
Great.
Because people, you know, some people don't need certain supplies, or they don't need a large amount of it, and so certain supplies will go to waste, or people are not getting enough supplies that they need or that their community needs. So
because of someone's judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Judgment of what they need and how they should be using.
There's a long legacy of that.
Yeah.
You know, people coming in to try to, you know, save downtrodden people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these downtrodden people, there's no such thing as a downtrodden person. You know, they are being oppressed. mm-hmm. and they have the tools for their own liberation. And it's on us to be able to just help them as they ask for it.
Exactly.
So thank you.
Yeah. exactly. We also have a board of individuals who are active users in that community that we...
Your board are active users.
So in PPOP, okay. Our board is. So
I just wanted you to say it again.
Yeah.
That is rare.
So whenever we decide where we're going to allocate different funds that we directly fundraise, we try to ensure we're asking our participants and polling our participants and people who are accessing services on what the next step is. Mm-hmm. There's certain supplies like Narcan. Mm-hmm. We often don't have enough to give out to every single person. We also have various programs and supplies where we have a cap of like 20 that we can give out for each outreach day. Mm-hmm. So if we wanna like bump those supplies up, we're making sure we're putting it in the right place for the folks who should be in charge of what we're doing. Excellent. Because they know what they need.
Really good. Thank you. Are we missing something? Is there another point about outreach that we should be hitting on in terms of how you've come to your praxis?
I mean, I think it's just mostly making sure that people know that we center it around the people who are accessing it. We also care about other community members. You know, I again just
like trans people.
Yeah,
I get my hormone syringes from PPOP. Thank you very much.
I did before too. Yeah. I think that it's just really important that people know that there's other things there, like as a member of the community who may need it, like safer sex supplies or wound care supplies, like always centering drug users because that's our main thing, but we also are here to support everyone. And if we are in your neighborhood and you have questions, we love to talk to people. I can talk all day about this stuff. Mm-hmm. And I just would like to invite friendly conversation around those things to ensure that people feel like we are representing the full community of this city.
Well, yeah, if it seemed like I was droning on that, it's just because I think it's very impressive that you are rendering services to drug users, but you really are rendering a service rather than mandating some sort of life change, right? Mm-hmm. Almost all engagement that any addicts have or drug users have is with people who are talking down to them, that are absolutely punishing them, that mm-hmm. are, you know, carrot and sticking them into whatever, you know, program definitions they have. Mm-hmm. And of course, we know, you know, I know, but I want my listeners to all know that it's one of the reasons that people who live on the street that are active users, they don't trust people who are saying, "I'm here to render a service to you." They have every reason through experience to distrust and disbelieve that claim.
Yeah, and something that I think is just so beautiful about harm reduction and PPOP is that it is a place where people can really just come and be themselves. People can come and tell us funny stories about things that they did related to drugs that no one else will laugh at. People can come and be open and honest and ask questions that they can't ask anywhere else.
And they're also not just a drug user. Mm-hmm. They're a person.
Exactly.
Everyone who comes, I've made so many incredible friends and gotten to have so many incredible people in my life. And like, none of them are just drug users to me. They are like my family, you know? And I think it's really important that that's a big part of our model too, is that all of these people are people. It's wild to think about it that way. But
And we, you know, PPOP is founded in like loving drug users as they are, and that they are our friends and family. And if you come on a Sunday, which are the days I typically do, you know, there's been so many days where we are lugging like 10,000 syringes between three people on top of a bunch of bins and backpacks and, you know, doing a 5-minute walk with all that. And then we just have this group of people, and I'll look behind me and we have all these participants helping us. Beautiful. Helping us clean up, helping us set up,
bringing us snacks, giving us umbrellas, like,
yeah, they take the care
most,
of us.
Yeah, the most giving okay. people I know.
Yeah. And you know, I think there's a lot of talk in the community about like discarded syringes and the horror of this and blah blah blah, whatever, that, you know, that's its own thing, but
that's
like
a sanitation issue.
Yeah, and
I would love to talk about the statistics of also around transmission of disease of discarded syringes, just to demystify that if we have a second.
Oh, that's, yeah, that's great. I just, you know, yuppies really get on my nerves.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, this is who I imagine you're talking about. You know, oh, look at the syringes. Yeah. Terrible. I mean,
the color orange should, will not give you
hepsi. I'm sorry, but like, you should be more disturbed that there's poverty abound than yes. having to see a syringe, and that yeah. it doesn't. I mean, it just, I understand that there's mixed consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not throwing people away. These yeah. people can absolutely be won to a better idea, but
yeah.
before I go in and try to change your mind, I'm judging you and rolling my eyes.
And the truth of the matter is, like, there are millions of syringes that go out in Portland, just in Portland, and you really don't see that many. Just walking on the sidewalk yeah. or going to the store. That's because drug users are picking those up and they're exchanging them. They're safely disposing of them. So I think there's a lot of rhetoric around drug users not caring about the community and not caring about disease transmission, and they're selfish and not responsible. And that is yeah. not true, because nobody yeah. is taking care of the community more than drug users. They are the ones that are picking up. They are the ones that are disposing. They are keeping themselves safe, their community safe, and the larger community safe.
Well, it's a very necessary part of dehumanizing and mm-hmm. demonizing a group of people mm-hmm. so that you can then police them. And yep. on the topic of police, we have another question from a listener. Are people targeted by the police after getting fresh needles from y'all? Do you know about this at all?
So I've worked at other exchanges as well. Okay. And I mean, sometimes there has been days where people are like, there's a cop around the corner who's been watching people and trying to nab them. Portland has Outside In is one of the oldest syringe exchanges in the country. It's the third oldest. So there's a relatively okay understanding between the police and syringe exchanges. We've had a couple incidences in PPOP, but for the most part, they do stand back because they have a mild understanding of what we're doing there. So it doesn't happen super often, but there's been occasions. But once they're beyond the syringe exchange, mm-hmm. they're often targeted. And you'll hear a lot of stories if you come out on outreach.
How does that look like?
So, I mean, if people are just trying to organize their things, and if they see any sort of equipment, people yeah. will be searched. And I mean, a lot of folks are targeted within stores when they're not even trying to do anything but yeah. use the bathroom, you mm-hmm. know, and are thrown out of stores or had the cops called on them because they were taking too long and they yeah. were seen as a drug user yeah. and just trying to find safety and hygiene and sanitation, you know?
Okay. Yeah, there's something there about putting the onus onto the affected and having no structural analysis, mm-hmm. you know, as if someone who uses drugs, you know, is just a different kind of person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I understand that that's the function of stigma, you know, is to actually convince people that they are.
Yeah.
But that, it's not a more popular idea to immediately turn that sort of attempt at demonization on its head and say, well, aren't you depressed, you know, imagined person in Starbucks, right, that's complaining? Aren't you depressed? Aren't you unhappy with your job? Doesn't your boss bully you? Don't you have people who you do things for that don't appreciate you? Mm-hmm. Like, these are things that cause people to find, for whatever reason, that like drugs make it a little bit more bearable for them to live. Mm-hmm. And if they develop problems in their lives as a result of being addicted, that's another question. And the answer to it certainly cannot be, we'll just punish them more.
Yeah.
This is a person that was suffering before. Mm-hmm. And you think that by making them suffer more, that they'll somehow snap out of it. And then what? Come back to the same world that you're living in that you hate too? The answer is to change the world, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, tough love doesn't work always, usually.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Where is P-Pop? And by the way, again, for people listening, P-Pop, the Portland People's Outreach Project, doing harm reduction and needle distribution, they will show up whenever and wherever they are called by people who need their services, by people who use drugs that want and deserve safety and harm reduction. And it's Sarah and Ren that are here with me. And I want to know what is the future, or what does some of the future of P-Pop look like for people who are interested? Will there be any changes, any additions? What can people look forward to? What should people be on the lookout for?
I hope that we can expand soon and reach other parts of Portland where there are not harm reduction services. And I think that we are always growing. We've grown a lot in the past few years since we've started. We went from like 1 day to 3 days. We went from a handful of volunteers to like 50 to 60 volunteers, and that's always growing. I hope that we can have more supplies. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. How do you appeal to more supplies? Is there just a supply store that you buy from a warehouse?
We need money.
Yeah. You need money. Okay. Yeah. So you want donations.
Yeah.
So how do people donate? Money.
You can donate through our site. You can, yeah, I think that's the biggest
site,
way we have.
By the way, is PortlandPeople'sOutreach.org.
You can also just message us on Facebook if you have a donation.
The Facebook is P-P-O-P, Portland People's Outreach Project.
And follow our Facebook page. We always post our fundraisers on there. We do a lot of benefit shows. Sometimes people do talks and lectures for us and donate ticket sales to us.
I also think the future is finding a set site again. That was a really unique space in St. John's that we had. That actually was able to host people for hours throughout the weekend, especially during the winter time when it's so cold. It was oftentimes the only space that allowed people to charge their phones and be inside and eat food. And we would often provide warm clothes. Mm-hmm. And we were starting a testing program, a rapid Hep C and HIV testing program, which we are unable to do outside because the temperatures fluctuate so much, so the tests are inaccurate. So we need an indoor space to do that. So if anyone has a space that they would be willing to donate for several hours a week,
In St. John's,
throughout the city. Yeah. Okay. We would love to hear from them.
Can you say that again?
If anyone has a space that they would be willing to donate to Portland People's Outreach Project for several hours a week, we would love to hear from them.
Okay. Cesar Augusto wants to know, has P-Pop seen an increase in volume of individuals who use the resources they offer? So has your rate gone up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. What do you attribute that to?
I think just people, like word of mouth, word on the street, people figuring out where we are, who we are. I think for a while when P-Pop started, they were kind of like, I remember I wasn't in P-Pop when it started, but I remember hearing whispers about like, who are those people on bikes that go to the park and hand out meth pipes? And so, you know, word's gotten out and people, you know, people run into us, people hear from their friends. We have a pretty big following of people and community support. Okay. So I would attribute it to that.
Okay. I think it's also referrals through other organizations as other nonprofits and social work organizations have gotten more familiar. They're less scared to refer people to the bike folks.
What about that? I mean, what is your relationship like to more traditional rehabs and services that, you know, the city and the county contracts with for drug users. What, because obviously you have a different model. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So if you can talk about how your model is different and what your relationship is like with people who use a traditional model, I think that that's interesting.
I think that we have a pretty good understanding that we're all in this to support people and being safe and keeping our community safe. I think many of the individuals in more traditional models have to do their work through the lens of the funding that they receive.
Okay.
So federal funding, state funding wouldn't allow us to do the work that we do.
Ah.
And that's one of the big reasons why mm-hmm. we do only function off private donations. We wouldn't be able to do as direct of service, as community-based service, if we did accept that funding. I think we also wouldn't be able to advocate for things like safe consumption spaces, which I hope is part of PPOP's future as well.
Okay.
We need spaces for drug users to safely inject their drugs in a sterile space. This is one of the bigger things that doesn't get noticed is abscesses, endocarditis, cellulitis, all of those public health issues that affect drug users because they're injecting drugs outside.
Okay.
And just washing your hands, being able to sit down for a second and mm-hmm. making sure that someone doesn't overdose mm-hmm. is huge. And so I hope that we can also find Absolutely. Space for that.
And decriminalize, mm-hmm. legalize, hopefully in the future.
Please extrapolate.
I think most of the harms from drugs come from the war on drugs. We have created a world in which drugs aren't safe and people that use drugs are not safe. And I think that this idea can sound really outlandish to a lot of people, but
sure.
Bars are safe consumption spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody trips about that.
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol is legal, and we saw what happened when alcohol wasn't legal.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you look to Portugal and some of their successes, and you know, if people, we would have less overdose deaths if people knew what they were getting, if it wasn't cut with a bunch of stuff that wasn't safe. We would have less overdose deaths if people were properly educated about drugs and mm-hmm. weren't told, hey, don't do drugs, they're bad. But if you had like legit real information about like what drugs you can and can't mix, and mm-hmm. You know, how to take care of your friends and things like that.
Mm-hmm. So when I was asking my question about like more traditional models, I also had in mind like 12-step programs.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, what is PPOP's orientation to 12-step programs?
We don't like necessarily have a relationship or mm-hmm. I mean, I think everybody in PPOP has different views about that, and some mm-hmm. people, there's a lot of 12-steppers in PPOP, and there's okay. a lot of people who are against the 12-step model
mm.
because of I think there's a way of like shaming people and making people feel bad about their past or their current behavior. So.
And we're not an abstinent only based model program. So, mm-hmm. you know, if someone's goal is to stop using heroin but still use meth, we're going to support them through that. We'll support them through whatever their drug use looks like. And sometimes that rubs up against 12-step model, and for some folks it doesn't, so mm-hmm. it's really just individual based.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think we just have the mindset that health and happiness look like different things for different people.
Mm.
And for some people that's continuing to use drugs, for some people that's abstaining from all of them, and for some people it's doing meth instead of heroin, or you know, just doing heroin and not benzos, things like that.
So if you can talk, I know you're Portland based, but you both travel a lot. Are there other cities who are getting this right? Is there proposed legislation that would put us on a better path? Is there organizing that's happening that will get us to a better place? Like, what is the forecast like? Like, where?
There's, as far as safe consumption spaces, there is a lot of cities throughout the country that are slowly starting that work. It's probably going to be a minute before it happens, but
a little bit farther than us though.
Yeah. Seattle, Philly,
San Francisco,
please Baltimore. Please say how Seattle, Philly, Baltimore, San Francisco are better. Like,
I wouldn't say they're better. I would just say they've done more movement in terms of like getting safe consumption spaces, like,
oh, okay. So safe consumption like spaces. Yeah. That's the difference. Okay.
Yeah, as far as like harm reduction services, Oregon is pretty big on one for one, which is like you need a syringe in order to get one.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of other states are like that. But there are also like a lot of exchanges in San Francisco and in New York that don't have that model, that have the same model as us. And
yeah,
we, you know, I think that's a little more progressive and user friendly.
Okay.
And I just think health services in general for drug users, like I was talking about Hep C earlier, that was a huge issue. And just I think more education and advocacy within that world and realm of no stigma, no shame. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, the number of people that I've lost this year to curable infections due to stigma in this city is atrocious. And yeah, I think that we could do a lot better here. But there are cities making those moves. There's cities who are loudly having the conversation about safe consumption spaces. And
so bringing in a movement lens,
mm-hmm.
if I may.
Yes, you may.
Well, I doubt that those cities that are doing it better or have safe consumption spaces, it's not just that their mayor and city council are just, you know, mm-hmm. super progressive, lovely people. But rather there was a, well, yeah. am I lying?
No, it was just funny to like think about that as a concept at all, like just a really nice mayor.
No. I mean, unless you're a millionaire, they're not really there to serve you. What was the fight like? And it's okay if you don't know, but like, did they get there?
It's a continual fight. We need all parts of the community involved in this. More medical professionals who are educated, more lawyers, more just neighbors in general, people mm-hmm. in the community having this conversation with each other, with us, with other community members, just to really understand and then advocate, be loud,
okay,
get in their faces.
But in an organized way.
Yeah.
So that's what I was getting at. And I won't drone on, but I'm...
We have there's also an organization, Safer Spaces PDX, that okay. works on this.
Oh, great.
So
now you're giving me my cookie. Thank you so much.
You don't want just vague talk about...
No, I need something to bite down into. I come on.
Okay. Yeah.
So again, can you plug them?
Safer Spaces. You can find them on Facebook.
I'll put them in the show notes, Safer Spaces.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's also on... a larger national level, there's the Drug Users Urban Survivors Union, right? And it's a drug users union, so they're really great. They're doing organizing around drug users' rights.
Urban Survivors Union.
Yeah, there's a few different cities with chapters. I know Seattle has one, really? San Francisco. I think there's one somewhere in North Carolina.
Yep.
Do you know anything about their origins?
I mean, it came out of, it was like an offshoot of harm reduction communities and user unions in general.
Okay.
Amazing people.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Really awesome.
We could talk about them for a long time, but we have 6 minutes.
Well, I only bring that in because, of course, this show is meant to agitate, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This is Alyssa Pariah.
Well, I would have known that.
So I want people to hear your brilliance and feel moved to action. So let's say, you know, there are people that are listening now
mm-hmm.
that are moved by you, Sarah, right? And they want to get involved. They want to help with this movement. How do they?
I would say you can join PPOP. We do more than outreach as well. Like lately I've had the honor of being able to present to several different communities about harm reduction in general and PPOP services. And I think that is super important. It's something that a lot of us really like doing, is educating the community about harm reduction and drug users' rights, starting a dialogue, because people have a lot of questions, because there's so much stigma and shame around drug use that, and okay. it's so normalized to hate people who use drugs. Mm-hmm. Like it's totally... Oh, I even hear
if they're poor.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yes.
If you have a mansion and you're doing blow off of a marble countertop,
it's
you're fabulous.
Yes. So,
okay.
You know, even like among radicals and progressives, like how often do you hear things like tweaker or crackhead? You know, things mm-hmm. saying things like that in a stigmatizing manner.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why dialogues like this are really important, because people want to learn. I think people want to be better. They just don't always know how, because like harm reduction rhetoric and language is not something that's like readily available. It's not something people are talking about because we're taught that drug users are bad, yeah. that they're criminals, and that they don't deserve respect. So I would say, like, if you join PPOP, you can help with these kind of community education. I would say keep an eye out for things in the community that are going to happen hopefully soon around around different harm reduction efforts.
Oh, okay. Great.
Also, like, we could always use support. Or people don't like us. And so
go to your
Nextdoor
community
app.
Yeah, go to your Nextdoor app, go to your neighborhood association meetings, and, you know, advocate for the people who deserve to be advocated.
Are you
for.
Talking about Montevilla?
Montevilla, St. John's, Inner Southeast, everywhere. We get talked about a lot.
Yeah, the Central East Side District.
Yeah.
The bid that they're putting in there. I had people come on from Compassionate Care Districts, bringing in Western Regional Advocacy Project, people from Right to Survive, Right to Dream 2, Sisters of the Road, Street Roots, and of course the socialists, right, that are trying to propose a counter to a new, you know, business, industrial districts, urban renewal, you know, all of that, sweeping away the dirt. You are the dirt, right? Thank you for being honest and saying that that those people don't like you. Well, it's important, you know.
No, it's true. And we really need support. Like, we need people showing up and being like, hey, those are our neighbors you're talking about. Those are our community members.
Mm-hmm. If you don't know how to have those conversations or you're worried about your language, just hit us up.
Like, we are very responsive.
I will sit down and have coffee with you anytime and go over like what this means in more detail. I'd love that.
We have a question. This is from Kat, who asked, does this mean I have to get back on Nextdoor? And I don't know what that means.
It's
so,
this app where people talk about all the crime in their neighborhood and how they
complain
saw this guy and
people.
You should probably just call the cops all the time for everything. I'm sure it's for something else too, but
it's
mostly
just people
just
complaining
for
about homeless people and poor people in the neighborhood.
And a syringe.
And being
that they
racist.
Saw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but like in general, show up to your neighborhood association meetings and stick up.
So Kat was being sarcastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, like, harm reduction doesn't just exist on the streets. This is something that exists if you work in a coffee shop, if you work in a grocery store, if you work anywhere that there's a public restroom, push back on your boss. Push back on your coworker who's calling them a tweaker or whatever. Like, just don't let that stuff fly. You need to, like, stop that dialogue because that's where it starts. And then that public's just agreement that these people aren't people is what turns into policy and everything else. And it just, that is like a first stepping stone just in your everyday life. Just shut that stuff down.
Okay, final thoughts?
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor A Holding Tank, a one-act comedy drama on Sunday, February 3rd from noon to 2 p.m. at Hip Bone Studios in Portland. A Holding Tank, a one-act comedy drama, presents one-act plays filled with drama and comic relief by emerging female playwrights on the Portland scene. This night features the plays Wild Bill, A Holding Tank, and Staged Reading, addressing issues surrounding suicide and mental health. Again, that's A Holding Tank, a one-act comedy drama on Sunday, February 3rd, from noon to 2 p.m. at Hip Bone Studios, 1847 East Burnside in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Musicians in Mexico City on Wednesday, February 6th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Musicians in Mexico